Welcome to New Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on cybersecurity and the local Colorado economy, focused on cybersecurity industry growth and initiatives that support cybersecurity economics. We hope this special series on blockchain builds your excitement for a possible future which empowers individual privacy. Please follow and participate as New Cyber Frontier is supporting a grassroots community effort to empower the individual in the digital age. Check out privacyforthepeople.org to see the upcoming crowdfunding campaign. Now sit back and enjoy as we introduce our great guest for today's show. Welcome to today's episode of New Cyber Frontier. On this special Colorado update episode, we have a roundtable here of Colorado legislators, both past, present, and future, hopefully. And so today we have on Kent Lambert. Sorry, I work with him all the time, and I just drew a blank when I looked at him. Trace Redpath, Representative Kerry Carver, and Senator Bob Gardner, all from Colorado. Trace Redpath is with the Office of Information Technology. And today we're doing a roundtable panel that was slated for an event we had local, and we ended up moving it over here instead. But I have some great discussions on what's going on with legislation, both how we're handling past legislation and what we're looking at in the future here. Each of you will go around the table and let everybody talk briefly, talk a little bit about yourself. We'll give you 30 seconds. How's that? Go ahead, Kent.
Sure. Kent Lambert, I'm the ghost of legislators past, and was in the Colorado State Legislature for 12 years. Before that, I was in the U.S. Air Force for 34 years, and currently the COO of Blockframe Incorporated.
All right.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. My name is Trace Redpath. As you said, I'm with the Governor's Office of Information Technology. I've been with the state now for 26 and a half years, but I'm not counting. Before that, I was in the United States Navy for about 5 years. And so I've been in public service my entire professional life. And I don't plan on going into politics. So I'm not the ghost of Christmas or of politics future, I don't believe. However, I've been navigating the political landscape for my entire professional career. So it's a pleasure to be here.
I'm Terry Carver, a state representative for House District 20, which is western El Paso County. And I'm in my fifth year in the legislature. I did 29 years in the Air Force as an Air Force JAG, and now serving in the legislature. And data privacy in particular is a very big issue for me. And obviously, you can't have data privacy without effective, systematic cybersecurity that is available for both the individual and businesses and organizations. So, extremely important topic for the state of Colorado.
I'm Bob Gardner. I'm a state senator in my third year in the state senate. Before that, I was in the House of Representatives for 8 years. I am a practicing attorney, continue to be a practicing attorney, and had a career in the Air Force, both active duty and reserve, for 22 years. Somewhere two lifetimes ago, I was actually a missile launch officer. I serve on the Senate Judiciary Committee. We have oversight of our State Department of Homeland Security. Those issues, I've worked extensively in data privacy on the Judiciary Committee in all sorts of contexts. And I have to say, in the 11 years that I have served in the General Assembly, one of the things that I tell people is striking is how many pieces of legislation we have dealt with, and in a bipartisan way, that deal with technological change and the challenges of technological change.
Yeah, and I definitely have seen that with the state of Colorado, very bipartisan and
working on cybersecurity, privacy, and how that affects the public and citizens' rights. And we're going to talk about some of those legislative pieces in blockchain, for one, that we've been very progressive in, I think, here in Colorado, some bills last year, and then some new things coming up this year again. But we're going to hear from our sponsors. We'll be right back to talk about those areas.
Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
Welcome back to New Cyber Frontier. On today, our special legislative panel, we started before the break talking about how Colorado is very progressive in the area of blockchain and using blockchain for citizens' privacy, government's accountability, and things like that. And in 2018, we passed a good piece of legislation. And Senator Lambert, talk about that from your perspective there.
Yes, that was Senate Bill 18-086, again, passed in 2018. And the intent of that was to try to use distributed ledgers or blockchains to secure state records. And we've just seen across the state, there's so many different use cases just in Colorado where we need to protect the privacy of citizen data. Mr. Ridpath and I were talking just before this about our basically services for welfare services, Department of Human Services type of services, as well as Medicaid. And quite often these are critical types of services for the most needy people in the state. And yet we're concerned about how much we might be exposing the personal information of all of those people that are involved. On the other end of it, we have organizations like the Department of Regulatory Agencies, which license professionals like doctors and lawyers in the state, and
teachers,
higher education. And we need to make sure that those records are well managed, that they're not broken into. I mean, who wants to go to a doctor who has a fake doctor's license? It sometimes happens, but we need to have good security and good communication on that, good proof that when you go to a doctor, it really is a doctor, or, you know, the appropriate degree of specialization that you're going to. So this is very important. Other state records, of course, tax records, voting records, I can go on and on. Almost every department has a need to secure their records in a trustworthy manner, better than we do now.
Yeah. So, and now this year we had some new things come across the plate. Representative Carter, Senator Gardner, any thoughts on what we saw going through this year?
Well, I think we saw a number of bills that put forth blockchain technology, the potential for that in the food supply system, in water management. There was a bill on digital tokens. So again, as this technology becomes more widespread, we see bills being put forth to perhaps utilize the technology in an industry-specific manner.
So in looking at those, and I did, and I'm sorry, your name is Carver, Representative Carver. Just wanted to, everybody was giving me the point there. But some of those bills with agriculture, with water usage studies, the desire's there, but there was no funding set aside for those. Do you think that that works without having some funding and ways to push it?
Well, I think we have many demands on the state budget,
mm-hmm.
and State Senator Lambert, as a member of the Joint Budget Committee and former chair, knows that better than almost anybody around the table, is that there's always more demand for funding than there is available revenue. And so it is a case of prioritization. And again, I would think we'll likely see more of these bills in the future,
mm-hmm.
as we look at different applications of blockchain, distributed ledger, etc.
Well, and I would also add that there are always creative ways of finding funding, mm-hmm. in support of improvements in technology. The state isn't necessarily always the sole source of providing providing funding for solutions.
Mm-hmm.
The state can do a good job of setting up a regulatory environment that encourages investment in technologies that can then benefit the surrounding community, which also benefits the state agencies and the citizens and the businesses and communities that they're trying to serve.
And so, with the other, the other act, though, that was passed, the digital token, I think feeds right into that. We're trying to support companies by allowing tokenization not regulated under Securities and Exchange, mm-hmm. that might help with that private. Do you think that's the best approach rather than funding through any state issue?
Well, I don't know that that's the end-all, be-all approach, but I think it's one approach. And mm-hmm. I think anytime we're in government, and me being a career-long government employee, I think I'm a pragmatic person. I think you have to look under every option that you can explore.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't it be nice if we had an unlimited pot of money and unlimited resources? The reality is we don't. And quite frankly, private sector does things better than government, hand over fist in certain areas, mm-hmm. and government does some things better than private sector does, quite frankly, just because of the nature of the way it's set up to do things. And so when government can enable the private sector to do the things that it does well and get out of the way and regulate a competitive marketplace, that's wonderful. In the areas where it can't, either it allows for partnership, it allows for expanded public-private partnerships, or it says, let's look for alternative funding sources. Let's look for, additional revenue streams. The all or nothing rarely works in local or state government. You know, it may at the federal level, but the creativeness that I've seen the state legislature work to solve problems, quite frankly, I think is really inspiring to onlookers like myself who are in the mix of it on a daily basis.
Yeah.
Well, in the interest of perhaps full disclosure, it's a matter of record, the agriculture blockchain technology bill is a bill that I provoked quite a bit of debate upon. Now, the truth of that and why that occurred was something of legislative insider baseball, in that those of us who are on the Republican side of the aisle are in the minority, and so in some sense, the longer we talk about things and discuss them, the slower the train moves for some things we'd prefer not to happen. It turned out that on the morning that something that we preferred not to happen came up in front of it was the agriculture blockchain bill. And I had not heard that bill in committee. It went to the Ag Committee. But I thought it was worth discussing, and I thought the philosophic discussion of what was the role of the State Department of Agriculture on blockchain and did they need money to do their job really needed to be discussed. What you find if you go out on your favorite search engine and put in agriculture and blockchain, you will find that the agriculture industry is so far ahead of where our State Department of Agriculture even dreams of being that my reaction was, you know, I don't know if we need this bill or whether we just need a resolution that says, Department of Ag, would you catch up with the train? I think, as Mr. Redpath sort of alludes to, the question with things like blockchain, technological developments is, how can government, with the lightest hand possible, regulate what needs to be regulated and not hinder the technological advances that are there? And I think there's an assumption that nothing good can happen without government, and yet if we look around, most really good technological things happen sometimes in spite of government. And that's, you know, you could have a whole podcast on that someday.
Yeah,
but I think that's kind of some of the discussion and debate. I mean, one of the things that government, I think, appropriately needs to do in this area is deal with the privacy issue. And, mm-hmm. and it's shocking, actually, as citizens begin to realize how much data is out there. It is an amazing thing. And so we've done a lot. Representative Carver has spent a lot of time on citizen privacy, as have I, and I know Senator Lambert as well.
Yeah, that's actually our next topic. But first, Representative Carver, you had a new report about what we've done over the last year. And I thought maybe you and Trace could touch on some of those. You know, how are we implementing what we've already put into place with the Office of Information Technology and other agencies that are included in some of the blockchain legislation?
Well, in fact, the state of Colorado issued a report yesterday that talked about how we have implemented an effort, a bill that was passed a couple of years ago to call upon our institutions of higher learning to build curriculum and degree programs around cybersecurity, recognizing that this is a need, again, for our business community, our nonprofit, government, and individuals. And so I just wanted to highlight really the premier effort that has been made across the state of Colorado in this effort is University of Colorado in Colorado Springs and Pikes Peak Community College, institutions here in El Paso County. And in fact, they talked about the UCCS Pikes Peak Community College hosting a hacker competition. They talked about working with industry to try and move that information and those capabilities out into the business community. UCCS also sponsored a Mountain West Cybersecurity Consortium with many students and academia from Colorado and New Mexico, again, to build collaboration with our neighbor to the south, New Mexico. UCCS was also awarded a very prestigious grant from the National Science Foundation under the Scholarship for Service. And in fact, UCCS is the first Colorado institution of higher education to ever earn this award. And this $3 million grant will provide scholarships to cybersecurity students. And in exchange, those students agree to work for the federal government for a certain period of time as part of getting that scholarship. But again, mm-hmm. this is a recognition that we need that cybersecurity expertise. We need it certainly in the federal government. And the final thing that the report mentioned, and again calling out the premier community college in the state, Pikes Peak Community College, their students were at a cyber competition in Maryland. They placed nationally. They also, our local Pikes Peak Community College Foundation, raised $50,000 again to provide matching scholarship money to students of Pikes Peak Community College in pursuing cybersecurity certificates.
That's
so
wonderful.
This, again, report just issued yesterday, but it really shows the commitment of our community and our outstanding institutions, our business community, to really aggressively pursue cybersecurity opportunities for our people here locally.
Yeah,
that's absolutely outstanding. I recently attended an event at the Space Foundation, and I heard it really described kind of nationally and at the federal level as it's kind of another moonshot effort during the, you know, back during the Kennedy era, as kind of a cybersecurity as being another moonshot effort, especially around data privacy and data security, that it's really that much of a critical national emergency that it really needs to be a moonshot level effort. And I'm seeing these types of examples of progress that are being made at the local area here in Southern Colorado. Very encouraging to see those types of things. Even in Pueblo, progress that's being made, the CSU Pueblo and Pueblo Community College being designated as National Security Agency Centers of Cybersecurity Excellence, both those schools competing in the same competitions and placing very well in those competitions that you mentioned and collaborating with UCCS and Pikes Peak Community College, and having a very close relationship with those institutions of higher learning. I'm very encouraged with the work that our Southern Colorado institutions of higher learning are really seeing that banner call and taking it up and leading that charge. So I'm very encouraged.
If I could just for a second, I'd like to expand upon that, because the Senate Bill 86 that I talked about and sponsored in 2018, a vast portion of that bill was funding. I think it was, $6 million that was distributed not just specifically to University of Colorado, Colorado Springs, but also CSU Pueblo, number even Western State University. A lot of the existing programs got a big boost from that bill.
Yes.
Now, I think the initial distribution of that money will take about 3 years, but in upcoming legislative sessions, that's something that we need to go back, see what is working, see what is not working. But the fact is, right now we are expanding the cadre of professors, especially at UCCS, at CSU Pueblo, and the community colleges. It was very explicit within that bill that they need to be looking at feeder institutions, including high schools and all the way down to elementary schools, as to how the teaching curricula for the future should be structured. I might also add, you know, three of us being former Air Force officers, the Air Force Auxiliary, the Civil Air Patrol, is deeply involved with this. Just in the room outside where we're filming right now, we had a competition of Civil Air Patrol cadets this last Saturday. And this is very common. This is going to be a new mission, I believe, of the Civil Air Patrol, to take people who are interested in national defense like this. I just had I'm also a doctoral student at Colorado State University right now in systems engineering, and I was talking to my department head last night, and I said, this is almost, maybe just not a moonshot, this is almost the Manhattan Project. There are lots of differences, but we need to engineer an infrastructure throughout the country that is resistant to the kinds of attacks from criminals and from foreign actors that we're seeing now. And we are very vulnerable. Our small businesses are vulnerable. Our state, even especially, we mentioned before the program here, that small police departments, small county sheriff's offices, are very vulnerable to being blackmailed. It's happening. We saw in Florida there was
ransomware attacks.
Ransomware attacks where they lost $650,000 from a small police department that couldn't afford it, or lose all their records. And this is very, very dangerous, especially for those first responders who really are our homeland security. That's where the rubber meets the road. It's not just the FBI and Department of Homeland Security. It's our local first responders that are going to be the ones we have to rely on, and they are very vulnerable to cyber attack.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I have to ask, it's just to carry the conversation on a bit further, Kent. Do those small organizations even have a chance whenever our major credit reporting agencies, the Government Office of Personnel Management, can't protect our data? One might be justified in saying, what privacy?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I wonder what people's reaction is to that. I mean, we need to do this. I'm not suggesting we throw up our hands and walk away, but small sheriff's departments, small law enforcement agencies, maybe the biggest thing they have going for them most days is they don't have the largest number of records. It's the mm-hmm. it's the big guys, and so they're not as big a target as they might be. But when they become one, it is extremely damaging.
Well, yeah. Because of some of the networking of that, they could be an access point to get the yeah. information from the big guys.
Pivot point, yeah.
Yeah, and so we need to look at all of that together. And just as the technology is the basis of the attack, technology, we believe, is the basis of the defense. And just like, you know, in World War I, we were talking about tanks versus fortifications and things like that. Which one is going to win? Is it the offense or the defense? And I think the country has been on defense far too long, and we need to start getting infrastructures together that will actually, first of all, defend mm-hmm. our equities, and then figure out how that works with those other criminals. I mean, we need to go out and get those criminals. It's interesting that actually some of the funding I provided law enforcement officers in the Department of Information Technology at the state level who are working directly with our police forces, and they are post-certified law enforcement officers with badges and guns. So, you know, we've talked about this for several years. Maybe we need to expand that program. But our small communities sometimes don't know how to even arrest somebody for cybersecurity mm-hmm. offenses and attacks. So
yeah, I mean, yeah. Your point's well taken. The thing I think smaller communities and smaller organizations need to understand, in my attorney life, I represent government contractors, and the federal government, particularly in the DOD arena, has been very cognizant and, in fact, has federal acquisition regulation requirements for the smallest of contractors because they're a conduit into the system, their pipeline there.
Mm-hmm. And when you look at things like, well, you know, the Federal Bureau of Investigation and their data security requirements, their CJIS data security rules, they have a lot of things going for them that do protect, you know, their core criminal justice information system, right? So if a sheriff's department in Ouray wants access to criminal history from the FBI, they have to agree to abide by the FBI's data security requirements. And those data security requirements are designed to protect the FBI.
Yeah.
Not to protect the sheriff in Ouray, protect the FBI and that data. And so those are, it protects the big guy, it leaves the little guy vulnerable.
Yeah. That kind of leads to our next topic on privacy
yeah.
for individual citizens. We're going to take a break here from our sponsors. We'll be right back to talk about that topic some more.
Murray Security Services are your cybersecurity experts with decades of experience providing professional training services for our clients in various industries. We offer professional training and certification in areas of cybersecurity, safety, health, and environmental services at our academy. Our in-person and online training provides a collaborative environment where students can interact directly with instructors through live chats or in private classrooms. Visit MurraySecurityServices.com for more information.
Welcome back to New Cyber Frontier. Before the break, we started talking about privacy for citizens and how that, you know, Trace, you brought, led into that perfectly where you said, you know, our laws, our security are set up to protect the big guy, the companies, the organizations, the government. But all of us here in this room have done a lot of work on how do we get individual citizens, small businesses, how do we protect the privacy at, you know, for the, you know, for the individuals in light of the big companies, let's say. So that is kind of, Kent, I'll let you kind of lead into that one on topics you're working with and our privacy for the people, a little bit about how that works with the blockchain and some of the funding actually from this bill going into some applied programs to help maybe make a future where this is different.
I think first this links back to something Senator Gardner said, you know, and Trace, about, you know, how do you pay for all this? And what's in it for us? If it's not part of the duty of the state to protect these records, why do we have them in the first place? You know, it really should be part of the daily business. But as far as privacy goes, we feel we have an ethical and legal responsibility to protect records like this. But we've seen both within the government and within business, there are, in some cases, unethical conduct. We've seen, there's, of course, a big debate now about some of the social media providers going and testifying in front of Congress and so forth. And I'm gonna pull out a couple of examples that people really identify with. What is Bitcoin? And there's a lot of discussion about Bitcoin is evil and it's going to take over the world. And, you know, but this was a reaction, frankly, of people who wanted, and I would say a sort of a libertarian economic principle, people wanted to have more surety of their money because they saw the government abusing their authority and inflating currencies and not making it transportable across international boundaries and things like this. Certainly, there are a lot of people probably in China right now where they've made it illegal who are saying, I can't trust the Chinese system. I need to have a trustworthy currency that I can control myself because it's my right to do that. The Chinese government disagrees. Well, we've had similar problems, I think, within, concern within the U.S. federal government. How do we figure our whole monetary union between us and the French and the British and everybody else, what is a fair system? And I would say in Bitcoin, their business plan is by a blockchain is to keep that information private. You do not know who owns the Bitcoin. And people rely on that particular business process. Facebook is talking about, I think it's the Libra, that is another crypto, it hasn't been invented yet, but another cryptocurrency. But interestingly, press reports and I think the first cybersecurity book I ever read said they have a different business plan. Their business plan is to get people's personal information and somehow transfer that to a third party to make a profit. And they're not the only ones, but it's interesting now if they come out with a cryptocurrency and start having really regulatory, corporate regulatory ability over their own cryptocurrency, how does that work? Is their business plan really to watch your checkbook as well as your social media? So there are some real significant dangers in how you use this. In one business process, it improves privacy. In another business process, you got to wonder whether my privacy is being improved or not.
Well, again, to sort of further the discussion here, let me just ask a question of everyone. What privacy? When I talk to constituents, people seem to fall into two categories. One, people who are very alarmed about the compromises of privacy, and another group that's fairly resigned to the fact that it doesn't exist anymore, that genie is out of the bottle, and it ain't going back. I had some conversations with a data analytics person in the political context this past week about identifying voters, a very legitimate thing to go find people who want to hear about what you're talking about. You don't want to talk to people who don't want to hear from you. And this may not come as any surprise to many of our listeners, but for any single citizen out there, there's 6,000 to 7,000 pieces of data available and aggregated to analyze things about me. I didn't know there were 6,000 to 7,000 things to know about me, but apparently there are, and I can be identified by my political views, my economic status. I assume they know how much debt I have, when I pay it, what family relationships I have.
Your vacation photos.
Everything. And when we talk about other technological advances and so forth, this whole issue of data privacy comes to the forefront. It is something that I think you're going to start to see in state legislatures, comprehensive data privacy statutes, which are going to be fought, frankly, by the national service providers, social media companies, and so forth, because Congress seems to be paralyzed of doing anything about that. So I know.
Look at the FCC ruling. Look at the net neutrality ruling that just came out. They kicked it back down to the state level. I mean, nothing can get done at the federal level. So.
Yeah, well, jurisdiction's a big issue there. Who has it in a digital economy when you're online with people at one hop to other countries, jurisdictions? There's no lines anymore.
I think Senator Gardner's point about a practical example is, you know, how we're using distributed ledgers and so forth for agriculture. Mm-hmm. If the commercial sector is so far out in front of this and they're using it, what interest is there for the government to stop that? If it's working, if it's not broke, why fix it? Mm-hmm. And I think that's a very valuable point, because our economy, this is sort of are we decentralizing our economy and letting our citizens make those kinds of judgments on their own, having the freedom to do that? Or, in the minds of some, gee, this is something we could tax. Wow, this is something we could regulate. And we really, really need to regulate it, because it's out of control. Okay? And we hear these kinds of things, rationale, all the time. Maybe regulation of some things that get out of get out of control, and they really are an assault on people's privacy. Maybe the government does have a very legitimate role to get involved in that portion of it. But as far as getting involved with the corporate governance of it and how the system works and the farmers or the ranchers that are making a profit off of this and using it as a tool, maybe the government doesn't have any business messing around with that.
Well, I think the interesting thing about it is, on the one hand, if you say to me, as a person who on the business side is looking for potential clients and, you know, set aside the challenges of attorney advertising and so forth, but any kind of service business, and you say, well, I can identify with all of that data out there, I can find the people that are most likely to want what you're selling. It sounds pretty good to me. And then when I'm the person to whom that's being sold, I'm not sure I really care to have someone knowing what toothpaste I use and who in my family I'm closer to than the others because I communicate with them more and what the value of my house is. All of that stuff has been out there forever, but when you aggregate it, it's a good deal more powerful.
Creepy.
So, Representative Carver, your thoughts on what the future looks like, and you know where you stand.
Well, I think certainly in every year that I've served, and I'm in my fifth year, data privacy legislation, of whether a broad scope or narrow, has been introduced in the Colorado legislature with mixed results. But from my point of view, I think the core public interest reflects individual expectations, even in the current age, that when an individual provides personal information to the government because they're required to, or provides personal information to a commercial business as part of a purchase of a product or service, that I think the individual still has an expectation that when they hand over their personal information, it is being utilized for that stated purpose, that it will be safeguarded, that it is not going to, that if there is information sharing or the further transfer of their information, either for gain or not, that is something that they should have a say over. And so I think particularly when you're purchasing on the internet and you have these very, very lengthy terms and conditions, and I suppose with a couple of cups of espresso, extra strong, you could wade through those pages and pages of terms and conditions and find the specific provisions on what you're consenting to. I would submit to you that is not truly informed consent by the individual. It is not a meaningful consent. And I think that's why we're starting to see in other state legislators and perhaps in Colorado, broad data privacy legislation that talks in terms of what informed consent looks like for the entity to further share or transfer the data.
Yeah.
Whether it should be an opt-in to allow for that further transference, and the default is opt-out. So we have seen other legislatures that have addressed this. I think we all wish that the Congress would do a comprehensive, meaningful data privacy legislation. That would make a lot of sense. But in this interim, I think many states feel like they need to move forward to protect their citizens.
Yeah, we have. If we look at the basis of privacy, it's the Fourth Amendment for the U.S. Constitution, and it says you have the right to privacy against government, the individuals. But it doesn't address companies and this new data era where we have third parties that hold our information. It seems like we need either at the state level, I would say you're right, at the Congress level, a change to say how do these third parties, how do they work with, what's the rights and responsibilities that citizens have, and what responsibility do they have to the citizens?
Well, and you know, I mean, just as a consumer, you know, sharing my information for, you know, for a service or in exchange for a service or a product, do I, you know, just assume that in exchange for those services that the person I've exchanged that information with, that they now have the right to sell my information 10 and 15 and 20 times over. You know, have I expressly given them that right? Or do I have the right to say, no, I'm sharing it with you and you alone, and you know, you shouldn't sell my information now.
So separation of the rights to use the service from the right to do anything with the data at a legislative level.
I mean, these are valid questions, you know. I mean,
valid questions in a battle royale.
Yeah.
I mean, the economic interest for having that information is so strong.
Sure.
I think one of the things that citizens really need to understand about legislatures at the national and the state level is if it's easy, it's already been done.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
and people will come to the table and get it done because there's a broad statewide consensus or national consensus to get it done, even at the federal level.
Yeah.
But I think the reason there hasn't been comprehensive data privacy legislation until recently, as Representative Carver says, in some legislatures, and I think we'll be dealing with it in sessions to come fairly soon. One is, I think people didn't know till the genie was out of the bottle. Mm-hmm. And two, now that it is, everybody's invested in it in so many ways. I mean, my personal example of, look, I find that really useful if I'm selling mortgage services, loaning, mm-hmm. To people, doing all sorts of things. That's very useful to me. But as the consumer, on the consumer end, that's very disturbing to me. And I have to balance both of those
and
try to figure out where we're going to go. An experience I had this morning was I received an email and I simply looked at it because it had some interesting information, and I received a text on my phone pretty quickly after that from the person who sent out the email saying, hey, Senator Gardner, I noticed you were looking at my blog post. I'd be happy to talk to you about it if you want to talk to me. So
or not.
and if I may, before you move on to the next topic, Chris, if I could just circle back to something you said earlier that I think really speaks to the integration of the technology and government's place in it. Because I think, you know, the governor's goal with the blockchain committee and the support for it, Governor Polis's goal, is to really, you know, set Colorado up as a state to be a center of innovation for blockchain technology, any technology really, to be a place, an incubator of sorts to foster innovation, to be a place that is attractive for companies to come and foster those new ideas and do those types of things. But one of the things that you said earlier is, you know, let governments create an environment and then get out of the way. And I think a classic example of that is it used to say one of the expressions in politics was and in economics was, as goes California, so goes the rest of the nation. I think you could also say in the retail world, as goes Walmart, so goes the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. Because and you could say the same thing for Amazon.
I was going to say, as goes Amazon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Walmart's probably a little dated, but they're still in the big three, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. What was it last year? They said, as a corporation, look, we're getting beat up with every time there's a food recall, when somebody, you know, somebody or a group of somebodies gets sick and somebody dies, or some group of somebodies die from tainted peanut butter or lettuce. Turns out to be contaminated with, you know, human waste or what have you. It's this mad dash to figure out where the food came from, what was the source, where was the source of the contamination, so we can figure out where the bad food is and get it recalled and mm-hmm. get it off the shelves so that no one else gets sick. And so Walmart said, we're going to set up a blockchain, And if you're going to be a leafy green vegetable supplier to Walmart, you're going to join this blockchain. And we're going to make the process of identifying tainted foods and leafy green vegetables trivial. So if we discover that leafy green vegetables need to be recalled, we're going to know exactly where that leafy green vegetable came from, right down to the exact farm that it came from, the date it was packaged, and where it was processed from. And if you want to sell to Walmart, you're going to have to join. And they have that kind of leverage in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. So everybody that sells said, I guess we got to join. And so really the grocery store chains, the Walmarts, as they begin to push this out, the other big retailers will do the same. So you'll start to see food safety, which is regulated at the state level and at the national level, will improve because the private sector has said, this is a mess. The federal government hasn't come to us. The Food and Drug Administration hasn't come to us with a solution. It's a mad dash. It's a mess. There's delays in getting care to the people that need it. There's delays in finding the sources of the tainted food. Let's solve this with technology and let's get this quickly solved. Mm-hmm.
Well, even more critical, we're seeing even in news this morning. Is the supply chain for drugs. We're seeing huge lawsuits over, massive amounts of opioids being flooded into small markets.
And absolutely.
You wonder, why is that? And also, what about all of the counterfeit products?
Absolutely.
Counterfeit drugs, counterfeit everything from printer cartridges to everything else that come in around normal government regulations. Mm-hmm. And get through because there's an economic incentive to it. But that's one of the issues I think we want to look at in blockchain or distributed ledger technologies is how can you have trust within supply chains?
Exactly.
And that's, mm-hmm. I think, one of our core values is, and maybe in summary of that, I'm beginning to think that there's sort of a three-legged stool here for good cybersecurity practices. One is, I guess you'd call it traditional cybersecurity, the defense in depth, all the tactics, all of the hardware, the software that go into a defense in depth type of structure. But I think everybody knows now that has some limitations because the bad guys are able to penetrate that. Mm-hmm. Then the second leg is the trust within the system. Sometimes the vernacular is zero trust, but it's recognition, first of all, don't deny that you have a trust issue. Just assume that there's zero trust. I can't trust anybody. I can't trust my printer. I can't trust my colleague, my employee, anything else, until I've proved who they are and that they're reliable piece mm-hmm. of hardware or person or software. Mm-hmm. And when I am sure of that, then I can let them work the system. The third leg is what I'm trying to focus on right now in my academic studies, which is systems engineering of cybersecurity. And I think everybody certainly now realizes that we've had a huge gap in that. Nobody knows really very well how to engineer this in hugely complex systems. And I don't think you can do that without very robust cybersecurity types of approach, systems engineering types of approaches. So I think those things working together is going to be, over the next couple of years, one of the main factors to address that issue that Senator Gardner brought up. Can I ever expect any privacy again? Mm-hmm. Well, I would say technologically, we can put it together to guarantee that privacy. On the state level, you got things like longitudinal information of all of our kids' records. Mm-hmm. That's very scary. Again, creepy, okay? Mm-hmm. We're going to have longitudinal assessments and longitudinal grade reports and behavior reports from kindergarten until 20th grade. That was pushed a couple of years ago, okay? And isn't there an economic incentive to grab all those kids' data, not for now, but for when they get out of the schooling system, now they are consumers, and if I have a you know, a 21-year record of the behavior of our children, that is really creepy and scary and a real problem with privacy unless we can keep our hands around that.
Particularly for those of us who spend a fair amount of time in detention. But.
In detention, yeah. Demerit.
So one other thing I wanted to touch on, and we're kind of getting close to an hour here, but you all have done a lot for small business and to incentivize. And I saw a regulation a legislation come down this year about reducing the burden of compliance and regulation on small businesses. But and Trace can tell us that the amount of like attacks they've had on the state, if a small business experiences those, they go out of business. And we have stats that say 60% of small businesses or so go out of business with a cyber attack. If what's the balance between reducing the regulation compliance on them, but yet making sure that they keep their cybersecurity intact, so one, they don't go out of business, and two, they don't compromise other agencies or bigger companies that they partner with, things like that?
Well, certainly one of the regulatory reform bills that I specifically ran to try and reduce the burden on small businesses really talked about the regulatory process in Colorado. And to try and force, require state governmental agencies to have discussions with small businesses before they ever get to the point of writing a regulation, to determine if perhaps a regulation in fact is not needed at all. Is this something that the market can take care of? I mean, sometimes you have state agencies who will identify an issue and immediately start writing a regulation with not complete information. And if they engaged in that conversation and had a fuller understanding, they would see perhaps a regulation isn't needed at all. Or even if they go forward with a regulation, the small businesses can say, well, look, if you take this approach, here's what our compliance cost is going to be, which is very difficult with small number of staff to run the business. But if you take this alternate approach, which has less record keeping, they can educate the state agencies. And quite frankly, we have a few examples where this is done fairly well in Department of Agriculture and a few other agencies that actually have a practice of going out and talking to the industry or the sector that they regulate to inform them about the best approach. And it needs to be, as Senator Gardner said, the lightest touch. And I think that applies across the board. I think when we're talking cybersecurity, I don't think it's the right approach for the government to dictate a very specific cybersecurity approach because in the fast-moving evolution of technology and threats from hackers, you're going to be out of date. And so it is not wise, not the appropriate role of government to say you will do this, this, and this. I think for small businesses, it is more how do we provide them with a viable path to utilize the cybersecurity tools that are available in a way that works within their organization and their very small administrative piece that's part of their business from both a cost perspective and expertise. And I think that's where the conversation needs to be in the state of Colorado.
All right, so we're kind of running out of time here, but I wanted to do 30 seconds, everybody around the table. Anything you want to add that you might have thought about while you were talking or missed during the show? Good, Senator Gardner?
Well, I think Senator Representative Carver, in describing the challenge for small business, has it right. It's interesting because I encounter this in my law practice, both as an attorney who has a lot of data, and the Bar Association spends a lot of time educating particularly small firm practitioners. You see that in chambers of commerce, NFIB, and so forth. I think they're a vital part of what small business can do because they bring small business solutions. And so we need to take the lightest touch and let those kinds of associations for industries do what they can. But it'll be an ongoing discussion.
All right. Closing?
Well, I think when we are looking at how do we address privacy, security, economic issues in the world of the internet, digital information, and how do we do that in a way that is creative, that is flexible, and certainly blockchain and other technologies provide us with some possible ways forward. But I think at the end of the day, the role of government, you know, particularly with regards to our own databases, I think the public has some reasonable expectations of us and how we safeguard mm-hmm. government databases. I think there's some reasonable expectations on protection of consumer data and how that is done so that individuals are not exploited and don't completely lose control of very personal and sensitive data. So I don't think, just because the task is challenging, that we can walk away from the challenge. I think we have to struggle to address it.
Well said.
Yeah, very well said. Thank you. Just one thing comes to mind when we think about small organizations and the role that we can play. I don't know how related it is to blockchain, but I think it is certainly related to how government can try to play a role in assisting and lining up resources where possible. I won't name the city or the organization, but in the past several months, a small hospice organization reached out to us, and it was really the reason they reached out to us was just through a network of connections that we've made over time by doing outreach of cybersecurity education and talking about our shared experiences with the CDOT incident, the ransomware incident that happened in the spring of 2018. And those connections that we've made with other city and county governments allowed for some relationships to be established, and through those relationships, a small hospice organization reached out to us that was connected to a faith-based healthcare organization, and they said, we don't know who else to call. We have a small hospice. We have one IT person who has left under a bad situation, and none of our data is here. It's all gone. And we can only administer basic patient care. Everything's gone. We don't even know who to call. We don't know what to do. Please help. And we were able to put them in touch with the FBI and our Joint Cyber Task Force. We were able to put them in touch with local law enforcement. And within about a half a day, just through a volunteer, there was no, you know, the state coming and saving the day, but just through volunteer people going, oh my gosh, this is terrible. Let's see what we can go do. We were able to recover their data for them and get them back up and working. And then law enforcement was able to be engaged and question the party that was involved. And that's ongoing. But really, it was just being there, being present, and being a part of the conversation, and being a part of the relationship, and saying, how can we help? What can we do? How can we facilitate the connections to get you the assistance that you need? And because, you know, a hospice organization isn't a government organization. We typically in OIT wouldn't be there to assist, you know, a non-government entity. But it was a happy circumstance that through those connections and that outreach, we were able to assist them. And they ended up being able to provide, you know, patient care, which was so critical. So I think those opportunities for connection and carrying the conversation forward, where we can find those, I look for those every place that we can have them. And we're exploring and looking for them. And I think the blockchain conversation is just another avenue in which we can continue to grow those relationships and look for opportunities to partner.
All right, real quick, Ken.
I think this is a great closing comment that we need to carry this conversation forward. And I would like to thank all the listeners that are still listening to New Cyber Frontier right now after a fairly long one-hour discussion. But this is kind of special because we have three state legislators in this room that have individually worked on this issue. And I think the listenership should take away the idea that this is not just it's not a partisan stereotype of what politicians do. It's very nonpartisan. There's usually violent agreement about working together on these issues as a part of policy, not just politics. And I hope we can continue this discussion into the future on New Cyber Frontier.
All right. And thanks for joining today at New Cyber Frontier.
Thank you.
I know we went a little bit long, but I hope that you listeners enjoyed this and really got to hear from the people that are making a difference here in the state of Colorado. And I thank you all for joining today.
Thank you for having us.
All right.
Thank you.
And make sure to take a look at our Privacy for the People campaign at privacyforthepeople.org. You heard it here on New Cyber Frontier.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember, please follow and participate as New Cyber Frontier is supporting a grassroots community effort to empower the individual in the digital age. Check it out at privacyforthepeople.org. Also, make sure to join our mailing list so we can keep you informed. If you have an idea, if you have a question you would like to hear answered, or if you just want to get involved in what we're doing, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links because they are the ones that really make this show possible. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.